Hello, a very, very warm welcome back to you. We are now on episode 45 of the Gita Decoded, and Sister Denise, our speaker, is taking us through each and every chapter and explaining to us her understanding and experience of what is contained in the Bhagavad Gita. We are now almost at the end of chapter 13, the Yoga of the Distinction Between the Field and the Knower of the Field. Sister Denise, it's great to have you back. Welcome back to the studio.
Thank you.
Now, we stopped at the 22nd shloka in the last episode, and I'd like to take you further into 23, which is obviously a continuation of the same train of thought. He who in this way knows the spirit and material nature along with the qualities in whatever stage of transmigration he may exist is not born again. I didn't understand this verse in the context of other verses that I've read in other chapters, and I was a bit confused. I also would like to know what is meant by transmigration in this context.
You know, the traditional Hinduism speaks about the soul moving through different species and evolving until finally it becomes human. And in order for a person to read a verse, they have to be human because animals don't read.
True that.
So, you know, in Brahma Kumari's Raj Yoga, we would say that a human soul always takes a human birth. And we would also say that the procession through rebirth takes you from the pure stage, slowly declining to the completely impure stage. But this stanza clearly indicates that the writer believes that there is an evolution. And of course, the aim in Hindu practice is to come out of the cycle of birth and rebirth and to go to nirvana and not come back. So this is a reference to that.
Sister Denise, I read verse 24, and what I got from it is that in the search of the self, in searching for oneself, this is the processes one goes through. Verse 24 reads, some perceive the self in the self, capital S, both occasions, by the self through meditation, again capital S, others by the discipline of Sankhya, a subject that we dealt with before, and still others by the yoga of action. What is your understanding of this?
I think, again, we have some merging of the idea of the self in a soul conscious state and the self referring to God. And in our understanding, in Brahma Kumari's Raj Yoga, what you're trying to reach is a soul conscious stage, to maintain the soul conscious stage. And we would say that it's not either or, but really both and. The discipline of Sankhya means the yoga of knowledge. You really want to understand the knowledge deeply, go into the knowledge, because that is the basis of meditation. And then karma yoga, the yoga of action. You want to perform your action in remembrance of God. So I think what we have here is some merging, which may need some unpacking. So, but my take on it would be like this, that no matter what, you have to become soul conscious. You want to understand and you want to practice the remembrance like that.
I'm going to skip a few verses, and then we come to verse 26, which kind of summarizes that which has been stated from the beginning of this chapter. Know, Arjuna, that any being, whatever that is born, moving or unmoving, arises from the union of the field and the knower of the field.
I think that anyone who's born is going to be moving.
Mm-hmm.
So unmoving would refer to an inert material object, maybe a plant. Plants don't walk around. Maybe a stone, they don't move. But really, when you're born, that means you come into the body, you're animating the body, you're moving, and that combination is Prakriti, the material, and Purush, the spirit.
The next verse that was of interest to me is, he who sees the Supreme Lord existing alike in all beings, not perishing when they perish, truly sees. And this theme is continued in verse 28. Seeing indeed the same Lord established everywhere, he does not injure the self by the self, capital S then small s. Thereupon he goes to the supreme goal. Sister Denise, I understood that the Gita was very clear a few chapters ago that God is not omnipresent. And this chapter, this verse particularly, says otherwise. Am I misunderstanding it?
No, there is that both strands are there throughout the Gita. There are many, many verses which indicate that God is omnipresent, and many that indicate that God is not omnipresent. So in the Brahma Kumaris, we would say God is not omnipresent, but his reach is everywhere.
That's a very beautiful way of putting it. Sister Denise, I think it's a question of understanding, because many won't necessarily believe that God is omnipresent. However, they would like to feel that God is with them always, and so they call it omnipresence.
Well, you know, there's this idea of being able to feel the presence of God. And, you know, as we have experienced, while we're discussing all these things, we often have the feeling that God is quite aware of what we're discussing and somehow present with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when something is going on which is really ungodly, then why would God be present there, you know? So the mind of God is without limit, and God will be aware of whatever's happening and pay attention to wherever he wants to pay attention. One practice within Christianity, Brother Lawrence, one of the monks, practices the presence of God. So just trying to invoke God and ask God to be there with you. And I think that the idea of karma yoga amplifies that, which is very often mentioned in the Gita, yoga of action. So you're performing karma in the remembrance of God. You're drawing the presence of God into wherever you are. But if somebody is not practicing the presence of God or awareness of God, God may well be quite absent, you see. So it's about God being somewhere and able to be with you in mind, be with you in spirit or not.
How do you understand, Sister Denise, verse 29 that reads, he who sees that all actions are performed exclusively by material nature, and thus the self, capital S, is not the doer, truly sees?
Well, I would say that I would differ from that. I would say that it's not possible for matter to act, because matter is inanimate, matter is inert, and the spirit or the soul causes movement. And you see, the thing is, what is said here is that the self is God, who doesn't do anything. Therefore, if something is getting done, matter must be doing it by itself. And we would say no, because you have matter, the energy of matter, you have the human souls, many, and then you have God, who is observing everything and who knows everything. So we would look at it a little differently.
Verse 31 caught my attention. This imperishable supreme self is beginningless and without qualities. Even though situated in the body, Arjuna, it does not act and is not tainted. I didn't get that.
Well, again, it is following the same idea that God is in everything, but because God doesn't do anything, if something is getting done, it can't be done by God, so it must be done by matter. And, you know, it's not possible for God to be present in a body which is doing something contrary to the principles of God without there being any consequences. And so again, I would say that we have to say God cannot be in the body, and whoever is in the body, the spirit, is tainted by the action. You see, so there are people who believe that the soul is part of God, and that God is completely pure. And this is why, for example, the purification rituals involve ritual bathing or fire or something like this, which purifies the body, because the thought is the body becomes impure. But in fact, the body and the soul both become impure, according to our understanding. But God never can become impure. God is immutable. So this is where, again, we would see a difference.
A metaphor is used in verse 33 that kind of brings to light what you just said. As the sun alone illumines this entire world, so the Lord of the field illumines the entire field, Arjuna. So it's saying that he's present, but not doing.
Well, what I would say is that the sun has a particular periphery, and the sunlight reaches everywhere, the heat of the sun reaches everywhere, but you would not say that the sun is in those places where it reaches. But if you have something in the way of it, then the sun doesn't reach there. If you have a room without windows, there's no sun in there. So the sunlight only reaches where there is nothing to stop the light. If there's a tree in the way, there'll be a shadow. So, I mean, I don't really think that the analogy works adequately. Not quite adequately.
This chapter ends in the form of stanza 34, which reads as follows: they who know through the eye of knowledge the distinction between the field and the knower of the field, as well as the liberation of beings from material nature, go to the supreme. So, Sister Denise, I think the one thing that I picked up throughout chapter 13 is a theme of detachment, because the two are separate. The knower of the field, consciousness, and matter are separate. And if you're in awareness of the separation, then you go to God.
Yes, definitely, definitely.
But you interpret it differently, don't you?
Well, I mean, the thing is, for me, the issue is whether there are two or three energies. And I would feel that in this chapter, the self, the knower of the field, is referring to God, and the field is referring to matter. And there isn't any question of a third person. But then if you say that those who know God and the field of action, the elements of nature, then you do have a third one, you see. Because who is going to go to the supreme? It's not matter, and it's not the supreme who's already the supreme. So you see that sometimes there is clarity that there are three energies, and sometimes it says there's only two energies. And in Raj Yoga, as we understand in the teachings through the Brahma Kumaris, three energies are definitely there. So I would say that it can be a little difficult to interpret the way it is stated, yeah.
Mm. Okay, so we're looking at the energies of soul, human soul, God, and matter.
Yes.
And how they interplay the between the three of them.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Sister Denise, what would you say to a person who is interested in putting what is contained in Chapter 14 into his practical life? How would you incorporate it? How would you enrich your life with the contents of Chapter 13? How would you do that? Because it's not easy to understand, is it?
Not really, but I think it can be quite straightforward if you look at it that, okay, I will perform action accurately, knowing myself to be the soul, and attempting to be soul conscious and performing karma through the body in the awareness that God is watching and in a sense evaluating and assessing me, because at the end is clearly, if you do this right, you will go to God. So if you see that you're very aware that everything that you're doing is known to God and you are being assessed, and you want to make sure that you do everything in the most correct way possible, then certainly you will be successful and you go to God.
Mr. Denise, I'm of the view that Chapter 13 highlights the necessity of creating some distance, the soul creating some distance between itself and the body.
Yeah.
Okay. The word ego comes up in Chapter 13. The importance of detachment from the body is emphasized. How would one use this understanding as far as taking your spiritual life further is concerned? I know what you just said about the soul and God, but how does one go about practicing the separation between the soul and the body, or knowing that the two are distinct? Because in our day-to-day functioning, the soul and the body functions as a single entity. And it's only in the realm of meditation that we look at it differently. So what would you say to that?
Well, I think just being really conscious and turning oneself within. When you meditate in this way, that you withdraw your sense of self from the body and you really feel the distinction between I, the self, and this, my body, I, the being of light, see the world through these eyes, you're really practicing to create that distance that you were mentioning, and then you can really feel that there's a big difference between I, the doer, and this material world, which is on the outside of my body, and including my body is different from me, really feeling that threefold thing. There's I, the soul within, there's the body, the instrument, and then there's out there where you function. So practicing that means you have to be very conscious and very introverted, and this is a very important part of the practice of Raj Yoga, to be introverted, to be able to really know that I am different and this body is different and this external world is not me, and being also very, very aware that it's not that there's one thing, there's two things, the soul and the body in combination, but not one thing.
Sister Denise, the issue that does come up here, especially in light of the dark aspects of a human being's personality being mentioned, one is very aware at all times of the pull of one's dark side, okay? Ego is mentioned, but we know that when ego is present, so it's family, okay, anger, etc., all your negative qualities. Whilst having this knowledge obtained from chapter 13, how does one use it to overcome your own darkness?
Probably the effect of being very separate from the physical body is the best way, because ego is very often qualified as ego of the body, arrogance of the body, and which means I am this body. So when you're saying I'm not this body, that actually diminishes the ego of the body substantially. So probably that's a very good way.
Mm. Okay, so simple as that. I'm not the body. Do you use words? Do you sit in meditation?
When people are starting their practice, they will definitely say, I'm not this body, I'm not my role, I'm not my thoughts, I think, and the thoughts are what I think. I speak, and the words, I am not my words, I say my words. You're really using ideas in your own inner practice, in your own thinking, to really make it clear to yourself that I and this are two things. And then as time goes by, you become much more naturally aware of it, so you don't have to keep explaining to yourself that you're not your body. But then in that case, you would really check, am I in that awareness that I am separate and this is separate?
Okay, Sister Denise, thank you. I think this brings us to the end of this chapter. Admittedly, not one of the easier chapters in the Bhagavad Gita to understand or to implement. However, it does still contain a very deep message of understanding God's role in one's life and the need to know the difference between Atma and this.
Prakriti.
Prakriti. Mm. Okay, you say it better than me. any last words for our viewers before you bid them farewell this day?
I think it's a very interesting chapter that tells us practice being distinct from the body. And, you know, as you're walking along, I, the soul, am walking along, making these feet move, making these legs move. I, the soul, am looking through the eyes. My eyes are not seeing. I am seeing through the eyes. I am speaking through the mouth. I am the being. This is my instrument.
Mm. Okay, thank you. So there you have it. A very thought-provoking chapter 13 and its intricacies. One has to read it a number of times and look at various perspectives before trying to understand what the words are conveying to you, what meaning they hold, what are its subtleties, what are its depth. So there's various levels in which one can interpret what is contained in chapter 13. But I think what I appreciate most about Sister Denise's words today is to understand that there's a distinct difference between you, the soul, Atma, and the body. We also need to understand the presence of God in our lives and the fact that He's very present in our lives. And the more you avail yourself to Him, the more you will feel His presence. Also, the law of karma was brought into play here, so we need to understand how all of these energies work in sync. And if there is no understanding, then obviously one does not feel the benefit and of this chapter 13, its impact on one's life, and one also will not feel the presence of God to the extent that one would like. So this is a very deep chapter with various levels, and I do hope that you do take the time to read it again and try to understand what God is saying to you. And also, like everything else in the Bhagavad Gita, take it home and put it into practice, not just to keep it up here. So Sister Denise, thank you so much for what you've shared today.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us at home. We do hope to see you soon. Take care and goodbye.